Asking the questions mainstream journalists will never ask. This is your Richie Allen Show on richieallen.co.uk, Fab Radio 2 in Manchester, and triggerwarning.tv.
From Feature Story News in London, I'm Giles Gibson. Officials in Zimbabwe say voter turnout is high in the first polls since former President Robert Mugabe was pushed out of power last year. President Emmerson Mnangagwa of the ruling ZANU-PF party's main challenger is 40-year-old Nelson Chamisa of the Movement for Democratic Change Alliance. Meanwhile, in a surprise press conference on the eve of the election, Mr. Mugabe told reporters that he won't vote for the ZANU-PF party that he led for decades.
I can't vote for those in power who are my just now, who are the people that have brought me into this state. I can't vote for them.
Final results in the election are expected by the end of the week. Russia's parliament has approved new legislation that would raise the rate of VAT for the first time ever. As our Moscow correspondent Lucy Taylor reports, the bill is one of a package of unpopular measures which has knocked President Vladimir Putin's popularity ratings.
Support for President Putin fell from 62 to 48% in just 2 weeks after his government announced a package of new revenue-generating measures at the start of June. One of those proposals has now passed through both houses of parliament. The increase in VAT from 18 to 20% would take effect from the 1st of January next year. It's likely to mean that prices go up. At the same time, thousands have been protesting against a plan to raise the pension age for both men and women. Analysts say President Putin needs this extra revenue to fund promises he made after his landslide re-election in May.
And CCTV video of a student being hit by a man who harassed her in the street has gone viral in France, coinciding with the government push to hand out on-the-spot fines for street harassment. The new law would see fines of between 90 and 750 euros. Elena Casas has more from Paris.
Marie Laguerre, who's a 22-year-old student, was heading home from work last Tuesday in central Paris when she was harassed by a man shouting obscene things at her in the street. She shouted back, telling him to shut up. He then threw an ashtray at her and hit her. The assault was captured on a cafe's CCTV and the video has gone viral in France. Marie has given a number of interviews to French media, saying she doesn't regret trying to fight back. A new law on sexual harassment, approved by Parliament in May, is due to come into force next week, which will allow police to hand out on-the-spot fines for sexual harassment. Marie and many other French women say it's about time police took harassment more seriously.
From bureaus worldwide, this is FSN.
Go on, Marie. Good for Marie. Fines between 90 and 750 euro can be handed out by French police on the spot for activity that is deemed to be sexually harassing of women or men or whomever. Interesting times we live in. That's some scale, that isn't it? 90 to 750. What do you get a 90 euro fine for? For wolf whistling at a girl and saying something as crass as, "Show us your jugs, love!" Moving up to 750 for, I don't know, maybe suggesting something a little bit more. Well, leave it there, Richie. You might get into trouble. Welcome back to the programme. Good to be with you.
Welcome back to the most listened to independent radio show in Europe. It's your Richie Allen Show.
Show us your jugs, I tell you. Or don't. One or the other. Right. Let's start the programme, shall we?
It's the Richie Allen Show. Broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
I don't think it's funny shouting at somebody, "Show us your jugs," but how do you police something like that? Giving police officers the rights to fine people on the spot for sexual harassment. Give me a break. Madness. Right, good to be with you. Monday, July 30th, 2018. My name is Richie Allen. got two terrific guests lined up for you this Monday. Joining me this hour, I'm looking forward to speaking with Heather Brunskill-Evans. Now, Heather is an academic and author, very interesting lady indeed. You do know by now, because we talked about it a couple of weeks ago, there is a consultation going on at the moment about whether or not to change the Gender Recognition Act, whether it should be easy for someone to transition from one gender to another. You know, if they say, well, I identify and I trans, or I'm transitioning to male or female, they don't have to have doctor's appointments, they don't have to have a doctor say so or any of that. It's going to be made easier if certain people get their way. Now, Heather, very interesting lady, co-edited a book this year called Transgender Children and Young People Born in Your Own Body. We'll talk about that as well. And who created the alternative right? Who created the 21st century right-wing media? Neil Sanders, mind control expert, author, blogger, and frequent guest on this programme over the last few years. Great guy, Neil. He's been writing extensively about Breitbart, about Lawrence Southern, about Tommy Robinson, about Steve Bannon, and where all of these people came from, in his opinion. The election of Trump, Cambridge Analytica, of course, Brexit and all the rest of it. Neil Sanders joins the programme in the second hour. It's great to be back with you. It really is. This Monday, loads to tell you as well. I'll get to that a bit later on in the programme. One or two things going to happen in the next few months with the programme. Had a nice week off. I couldn't do anything other than just relax and lie around. It was an impromptu week off. I normally take 2 weeks at the end of August, but because of the extreme temperatures here last week and because we knew they were coming, I decided to split my holidays into two. So I took last week off. I'm with you until August 20th. I will have a week off then, and I will come back on August 27th. And you will have me then for 3.5 months up until Christmas week. That's the way it goes. Yes, good. Right, let's crack on and talk, because it's 6.5 minutes past the hour. And there are things I want to tell you about before we welcome our guests. This is a serious story. Tweeted about it today. Not going to get into it in great depth tonight on the programme, but I am going to be discussing it on tomorrow night's programme. Serious story. The BBC all over this today, in the absence of other broadcast media. Legal permission will no longer be required to end care for patients in a long-term permanent vegetative state. And that's a Supreme Court ruling here in the UK. It will be easier to withdraw food and liquid to allow such patients to die here in the UK. When families and doctors agree, medical staff can take away feeding tubes without applying to the Court of Protection. This is not good, I don't think. Okay, Jill Black, UK Supreme Court Justice, she ruled that there was no violation here under the Human Rights Convention. You can hear Jill Black explaining this today.
Well, quite.
The official solicitor contends in this appeal that there is, in fact, an obligation in law to apply for the court's approval before withdrawing clinically assisted artificial nutrition and hydration from a patient with a prolonged disorder of consciousness. Whether or not there is agreement between the patient's family and his doctors that this course is in his best interests. Today, we decide that such an application is not obligatory, and we dismiss the official solicitor's appeal. We find nothing in the common law, nor in any act of Parliament, that requires an application to be made, and nor is it necessary to impose such a requirement in order to ensure that there is no violation of rights arising under the Human Rights Convention. Our judgment reviews the important developments that have taken place since the decision in the Bland case. These include the accumulation of years of clinical expertise in treating patients with prolonged disorders of consciousness, and the development of very detailed professional guidance for the medical profession in handling such cases.
Right. Now, this ruling might impact thousands of families in this country. It's estimated there are about 24,000 people in this country in a persistent vegetative state or a minimally conscious state. It's going to affect a lot of people. Dr. Peter Saunders is the director of Care Not Killing. You might have come across him on TV today. That group, Care Not Killing, opposes euthanasia and promotes palliative care. He's understandably not happy at all.
Well, quite concerned and disappointed, really. I think this has really widespread repercussions and could be very dangerous. To be clear, what this ruling is about is a very small circumscribed group of patients, those with either permanent vegetative state who are effectively awake but not aware, or with minimally conscious state who are awake but only intermittently or partially aware. We don't know how many there are in the country. Professor Derek Wade from Oxford, who works in this area, has estimated it could be 24,000 cases, mainly in nursing homes. And we need to be clear that these people are not on ventilators. They have feeding tubes either through the nose or directly into the stomach. They may live for years or even decades, and some may recover a degree of awareness as well.
And that's hugely important. We're not talking about people who necessarily, whose conditions are worsening and worsening and worsening. They're not. Do you see where this leads? It leads to where we are in Europe at the moment, in Holland and in Belgium, and where we are in Canada. It leads to things like people applying to, and don't think this is a stretch or a leap, because it isn't. It leads to people deciding to unburden their families by taking their own lives. It leads down to this slippery slope where we're seeing in the European Union euthanasia and assisted suicide laws are becoming ever more lax as time goes on. Only this January, a woman, a 29-year-old woman in Holland called Aurelia Brouwers, I think it was Aurelia Brouwers, was euthanized over, you know, mental illness. We had a 74-year-old woman with euthanasia who was put to sleep effectively in 2016, having said or allegedly said when she was well that she wanted to be euthanized in the event she became ill with euthanasia. But closer scrutiny of the declaration she made showed that it was pretty vague in terms of what she wanted. You remember this case, we covered it on this programme. Just before she was injected, she knew what was coming and resisted, and the doctor told her family to hold her down. We covered that on this programme. And the review committee said that the doctor acted in good faith, but had made mistakes. And I've talked about this on this programme before. If once you have a situation like we have now, where without a court deciding that it's okay to stop feeding somebody, effectively a doctor and a member of the person's family saying, well, let's stop feeding them now, let's starve them to death, which is effectively what's going to happen. When you remove the judicial process from that decision, where does that lead? Well, it leads to assisted suicide for cancer patients. And where does that lead to? Assisted suicide for the mentally ill who just don't want to go on anymore. Where does that lead to? Well, why not assisted suicide for alcoholics? That's where it goes. 13 minutes past the hour. Dreadful stuff, this. And we'll get into this tomorrow on the programme with people who know more about it than I do. Jeremy Corbyn, the Labour leader, and anti-Semitism, that won't go away. Now, Ian Austin is a Labour MP, and he's being investigated over allegations that he screamed at other Labour MPs and the party's chairman, Ian Lavery, over anti-Semitism and Labour anti-Semitism policies. He's an MP for Dudley North, and he's the adopted child of a Jewish refugee, and he said that his upset was all about how the party tackles anti-Semitism. He spoke with BBC Radio 4, and he said the anti-Semitism code of conduct, which the Labour Party has put forward, is a disgrace. Have a listen.
I said that I thought the Labour Party's failure to adopt the... I thought the NEC's decision was a disgrace. Look, am I upset about anti-Semitism? Yes, I am. I am upset about that, and I'm upset as well about the leadership's failure. I think refusal, really, to, you know, to deal with this properly. I grew up listening to my dad tell me how he'd escaped from the Holocaust and how his mum and sisters were murdered in Treblinka, and that led to me joining the Labour Party as a teenager, determined to fight racism. And the first thing I did when I became an MP 13 years ago was to organise and lead a campaign to drive out the BNP here in Dudley. And I'm really shocked, you know, that a party that's got a proud tradition throughout its entire existence of fighting racism has ended up causing such huge offence and distress to the Jewish community in Britain. And I think this could never have happened before. I'm appalled that it's happened. I'm ashamed of the Labour Party. I really am. And I think, if I'm honest, I think we're becoming a different political party. I think this just could never have happened in the past.
Yeah, this just won't go away. Margaret Hodge, you remember, a couple of weeks ago, screamed abuse at Corbyn and Westminster, basically accusing him of being a racist. Now, Boris Johnson, the former foreign secretary and all-round buffoon, it could be argued, writing in the Telegraph today, incredibly writing in the Telegraph today, says that it is amazing that Corbyn does dispute the IHRA examples of anti-Semitic behaviour. In a nutshell, writes Boris Johnson, it is hurtful and anti-Semitic to claim that the state of Israel is a racist endeavour or to draw comparisons between Israeli policy and Nazi Germany. Corbyn, writes Boris Johnson in the Telegraph, thinks it should be acceptable to say both. It's easy to see why Corbyn has caused such offence to so many Jewish people, writes Johnson. Of course it is legitimate and in my view wholly proper to criticise both the Israeli government and Israeli policy. The UK has been fierce in its denunciation of illegal settlements, of the destruction of Bedouin villages and Palestinian homes, and of the firing on unarmed protesters in Gaza. Isn't it very interesting how Johnson constructs that paragraph? The UK has been fierce in its denunciation of settlements and firing on unarmed protesters in Gaza. What good is denunciation? What good is it to continue denouncing? It's the easiest thing in the world, isn't it? Well, that's a terrible thing the Israelis did there. That's wrong. That's really bad, that, and they shouldn't do it. And then turn your back. Sanction the Israeli government back to the Stone Age. As we've said a thousand times on this programme before. He goes on to write, does Boris Johnson today, that it's basically, to paraphrase, I've got it here in front of me, but I don't have time to read it all. To paraphrase what he's saying that it is reprehensible to call Israel or Israeli Jews racist in their philosophy or in their policy towards the Palestinians. It's terrible because of what happened in Nazi Germany and all the rest of it. But it's only a week ago or 10 days ago that Israel passed the Jewish nation state law, which is inherently racist, stating that only Jews have the right to self-determination. Obviously an inherently racist thing to do, but that's Johnson in the Telegraph. Loads to get through with my guests, so I'm going to leave the headlines there for now. Very quick break. When we come back, I will be joined by Heather Brunscale-Evans on Monday's show. It is July 30th, 2018. Great to be back with you. Tweet at Richie Allen Show with any comments on anything being discussed on the show tonight.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever. Forever.
Introducing the H2O app, a powerful water structuring application that programs vibrational energies into water through the use of different sound frequencies. Once programmed, the use of water for drinking, cooking, bathing. Give it to your friends and colleagues or spread it around the garden. The list goes on. It's not just water that the app can be used for either. It's great for programming crystals too. The H2O app is free to download and is available on both Android and Apple platforms. For further information, go to h2oapp.online.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
Welcome back to the most listened to independent radio show in Europe. It's your Richie Allen Show. The Richie Allen Show relies on your support. Go to richieallen.co.uk and set up a monthly donation today.
Right, let's get our first guest on the phone then. Heather Brunscale-Evans, you don't want to miss this serious stuff. This Monday, July 30th. 2018, your Richie Allen Show, live across Manchester on Fab Radio 2, triggerwarning.tv, TuneIn Radio, and richieallen.co.uk. Always brilliant to be with you. This is Stereo MCs back in two. Welcome back to the programme. We don't have time for music, so we better crack on. Let's welcome our first guest to the show. Now, I mentioned at the top of the programme, not a day goes by without a story about transgender issues or transgender rights appearing in the papers. It's an extraordinary thing, really. It's a daily occurrence. Just today, for example, Monday, ABC News, CNN, Washington Post, and over the weekend, the Daily Mail, the New York Times, different stories concerning transgender issues. The Washington Post today featured a story about trans women, men who identify as women, having vocal coaching to make their voices more feminine. Now, the coverage of issues that affect trans folk is a thing to behold. It's everywhere. We're talking about 0.2% of the population, so you can see why I would say, or I would argue, it's anomalous. The coverage of it is anomalous. Anyway, there's a consultation underway at the moment on whether or not to change the Gender Recognition Act to make it easy, to make it very simple for someone to transition from one gender to another. And it's a contentious issue, to say the least, as my first guest knows only too well. She's an author and academic. And last year, we spoke about this last year, she was due to speak at King's College in London about pornography and female sexuality and was, in fact, no platformed by students there. Her speech was eventually cancelled because she had appeared on a BBC radio show and expressed her opinions on gender identity. Students felt that she would violate safe space policies. This is extraordinary stuff, this. You know, as somebody who was foolish enough to go to university twice, I can't believe such a thing exists in 2018. There's a no platforming of people. Anyway, this year my guest co-edited the book Transgender Children and Young People Born in Your Own Body. Let's welcome to the programme Heather Brunscale-Evans. Heather, you are very welcome. How are you?
Hello, Richie. I'm fine, thank you.
Thanks for coming on. Do you know, when I saw you on Sky News a couple of weeks ago, I was thinking, I know this lady from somewhere. And then, because I keep everything, I keep all the old audio clips, I remembered you'd been speaking with RT back in late last year about this no platforming nonsense at King's College, which of course is a place that you've worked and do work. What's happening to us, Heather? What's happening to civilised debate when people can say, I demand this woman or this man isn't allowed to speak because it might hurt my feelings? Where are we going with this?
It's extraordinary, Richie, isn't it? I wish I knew the answer to it. I do know that it's a very serious issue that we should be debating, which we are now, you and I, on this programme. In our culture, I think, at the moment, there is an idea that we have to be progressive in a particular kind of way. And if we don't comply with what those progressive views are, we're automatically assumed to be regressive, anti-sex, anti-freedom. And so the debate has become hugely polarized. In fact, it's very difficult to say anything about this unless you're wholly and absolutely affirming of a transgender identity. And by that I mean that gender identity is innate, you're born with it, which I don't agree with. Even suggesting something like that is regarded as extreme and outrageous. And the interesting thing about the book is that I and my co-editor, Professor Michelle Moore, the book is about exercising caution in transgendering children. It's about respecting children's various gender identities, but not going through social or medical transitioning. Now, you'd think that that would be the most moderate thing to say, but it ended up being apparently an inflammatory thing to say. It would have been easier to say, we agree with giving hormones, puberty blockers and cross-sex hormones to children, which can, in fact, cause huge medical problems, including infertility. Now, if we'd taken that position, I could understand why somebody might get upset. But to get upset about us asking for caution in the transgendering of children is unbelievable, actually. I don't know how we have arrived at this point in our society. Well, I do have an idea, but I think I might bore your readers.
Your listeners. I don't think it bores at all. And we have time. We've got the rest of the hour to talk on this.
Right.
And I want to come back to children in a few minutes. Why? My feelings on this are well known to my listeners. So if somebody's listening to this for the first time, it might come across as pretty mundane for them, because I should be arguing with Heather, obviously, but I largely agree with Heather's point of view. However, that being said, as I mentioned a couple of weeks ago on the programme, I regularly invite people who vehemently disagree with Heather's position and the position that I have adopted to come on this programme, and this won't surprise Heather. They refuse to come on the basis that the presenter, myself, or the programme is hateful, when nothing is further from the truth. In fact, I often say to these men and women, listen, I'm not going to interrupt you. You can come on, you can say whatever you want, mm-hmm. you know, just to get the other side of it. But it's very difficult. So explain to our listeners then, why are women, and why are some feminist women, why are they worried about the proposed changes, before we come back to children, to the Gender mm-hmm. Recognition Act? What do you think it'll mean for women if it becomes, you know, very simple for somebody to say, right, I identify as, you know, a different sex to the one I was born with? Why is that a big concern to feminists now in 2018?
Mm-hmm. Richard, I'm very happy to answer that. But just before I do, I want to point out something. That this debate gets set up as a sort of two people in different camps.
Yeah.
There are the feminists, and then there are trans people, particularly trans women, i.e. men who identify as women. I think that's a bit problematic, because I think your listeners turn off, or people reading the news, watching the news, they turn off. They think it's just a spat that's going on somewhere on the margins of society, and it's got nothing to do with them. And as you say, you know, a very small percentage of people want a transgender. So really, it's a non-issue. So I'm going to tell you now why. It's a very big issue, and it's an issue for women, and it's an issue for children. You don't have to be a feminist to take this position. I'm pointing out something that you know, over 50% of the population, i.e. women, should be pricking up their ears about and being attentive to. So a trans woman would argue that, as they do, as my good friend, a trans woman, argues, why are you getting worked up about this? You know, it wouldn't hurt a woman. I don't intend to do anything. All I want to do is get on with my life and be a trans woman. Well, that would be fine. I would be very happy with that. I'm all for people, whoever they are, expressing themselves in whichever way they want. That's cool by me. We live in a democracy. I'm very happy that we live in a democracy. This isn't just about the individual rights of particular, singular trans women. It will change the whole of our society. And it changes the whole of our society in the following ways. Women, once if the Gender Recognition Act is reformed, it will mean that anybody who declares themselves, any man who declares themselves a woman, who won't have to go through any bodily reassignment, no medical treatment, all he will have to do is say that he is a woman and sign a piece of paper, and his birth certificate will be changed, all his documentation will be changed. And that person, I'm going to call him he because I think these people are he, and I'm sure that many people will get very exercised by my saying that, but as far as I'm concerned, that's a reality, will be able to go legally into any space that he wants to and declare that he's a woman. Now, this isn't to say that all, I must reiterate this and insist upon this. I'm not making a judgment that all men who identify with women want to hurt women. I'm not saying that they are all predators or sexual abusers. What I'm saying is the law will open a space in which people, men of bad faith, will be able to do that. It will be, and we all know it's a problem that we don't want to address about sexual violence, male sexual violence towards women. I wish it were not so, but statistically it is the case that there is a lot of sexual violence. Most sexual violence is committed by men. So men of bad faith will be able to argue for numerous reasons that they are actually women. It will support. This is not a. This is a law which will support patriarchy. Actually, if I can use that word on your program, in that there are all. It's not just about sexual violence. It's about many other things too. So we have all women shortlists now, which a man who has signed a piece of paper to say that he's a woman will be able to go on those all women shortlists.
I mean, which we've seen.
Theoretically, it could be full of men who identify with women, who have male bodies, who have been socialized as men, who are on those shortlists. Now, you may not agree that there is a need for all women shortlists. In a sense, that's another argument. They do exist.
Yeah.
And men who identify with women will be allowed to be on them. Well, they're on them now without the change of law. It's as if the law has already been changed. So that's just one example. We have another example, which I'm sure you know about, and your listeners may know about it, is of men who have perhaps committed crimes against women, including rape, sexual assault, will be able to declare that they're female and go into the women's estate. Now, you know, many women in prison have been sexually assaulted themselves or come from domestic abuse situations, and they will be forced to share a space with a male-bodied human being who has, in a previous life, been sexually abusive towards women himself. So women are really going to feel the impact of this in many, many different ways, in women's refuges, women's toilets, women's changing rooms. And now, Richie, it's got to the point where it's very difficult. It's apparently transphobic or transmisogynistic to talk about women's bodies, to use the names for our body parts, because that's excluding those women, i.e. men, who identify as women. So it's a kind of peculiar cultural takeover, which sounds extreme as I say it. I think this can't be happening. Surely this is something from a, you know, science fiction.
But it is happening. It is happening, Heather, because we covered a case on the programme a couple of weeks ago. I think it was the Mail on Sunday that covered where a trans woman, a man, I agree with you, a man who believes that he's a woman, assaulted four female inmates at a women's prison. That isn't nonsense. That actually happened. You talked about the shortlists, and in the future we might have a good debate about positive discrimination. But the fact is, I agree with you, they exist. We've seen that in politics. We've seen it in the Labour Party, where, you know, trans women were able to insert themselves into races that had been reserved for women. So it is happening. It isn't scaremongering. It is this weird cultural thing, and it is happening very quickly. And we're getting a lot of tweets on this, understandably. And people are wondering, where is it coming from, Heather? Because I'll tell you something, you said earlier on, quite rightly, not all trans men will be abusive. Look, I think that gender dysphoria is a real thing. And I think probably the vast majority of trans men probably wouldn't ever entertain the notion of sexually or physically assaulting a woman. At least I hope that anyway. Some maybe would, but the majority wouldn't. I suppose there wouldn't be any more trans abusers than there would be straight abusers or whatever you want to say. But anyway, where's it coming from, this? Because we get trans folk, and you said you have friends who identify, you know, trans men or trans women, and I have no doubt you do, and they say, this isn't us, Richie. Where's this coming from? We're not demanding that we go to whatever toilet we want. We're not demanding that we change the vocabulary to suit our, you know, ideas or, you know, our identities. It's coming from somewhere else. Where is it coming from?
It is coming from somewhere else. But I do think that those people who don't want to impose themselves like that should come out and support women's concerns. Because there is a very strong trans lobby in this country. I don't know whether you saw the... there was a building in London, and I've forgotten its name, about a couple of weeks ago, when it was up on lights, trans women are women, repeat after us. I don't know whether you saw that. It was really scary. That's in the centre of our capital city. At the same time, I have a friend who has a Facebook account where she turned that round and said, trans women are men, repeat after us. And she had her Facebook account closed. I don't know whether it's still closed, but temporarily shut down. So in private, she couldn't say that. But in public, we can have this mantra, repeat after us, trans women are women. And whenever I go to talk, there is inevitably a group of students shouting at me, trans women are women. So, you know, this is an extremely dangerous thing. This is an attempt to get at control of our thoughts. And if we don't agree with that trans women are women, in some sense, we're hateful bigots who deserve what is coming to us. And there's a lot of violence towards women who object to that idea that trans women are women. But where is it coming from? I've done particularly at the moment, I'm actually writing something about this. And if you trace the history of trans activism right back to the 1990s and the ways in which, this sounds exaggerated, but I can assure you it's not, trans activism has has infiltrated everywhere. It's infiltrated that trans activists are on medical bodies, on I'm actually censoring myself here, Richie.
Don't censor yourself, not on this program.
No,
you can
I'm
say what you want.
How much trouble am I going to get into for pointing this out? It wasn't for you. It was actually I was looking after myself. Because what I've learned is, in a sense, that I can only say so much, in terms of my own profession.
I was just going to ask you that, Heather. I was just going to make the point, you're an academic, you're an author, you're... you know, a learned woman, a professional woman. It is a pretty sad state of affairs where people have to think before they speak and resist saying something that they implicitly believe, lest it lead to, you know, loss of work. It shocks me. Mm-hmm. You know, this is supposed to be a free and open society where you can exchange views. And you talked about these people screaming, trans women are women. I had an experience in the city centre the first time I covered this, and I was in the Manchester city centre. There was a number of socialist workers party people there demonstrating about animal rights or whatever it was, and some of those people are kind of, you know, often the most likely people to recognise me through the programme. And I copped a bit of abuse as well for stating that I don't believe that trans women really are women. And it's funny, I couldn't reason with the guy. The more I tried to say, well, listen, let's have a cup of coffee and I'll tell you exactly what I think and why. Mm-hmm. He kept calling me names. And then because, you know, I'm bald, Heather, and I, as a vain man, that's one of my sins, I'm vain. So I shave my head because I'm bald. And because I have my head shaved, I suddenly became a skinhead and I became a Nazi. I said, you've no idea who you're talking to. You know, I spent years in left-wing organisations in the Republic of Ireland before I grew a brain and began to think for myself. I couldn't be any further from Nazism. You can't reason with people. They don't want to listen or even engage in debate and say, right, listen, tell me why I'm an idiot. Right, okay, I'm going to shut up. You tell me why I'm an idiot. We'll thrash this out and we'll reach some sort of consensus. But you can't. And then you have people like yourself saying, well, there are things I'd like to say, but if I do, I might end up getting, I might be, you know, applying, I might be on the, in the dole queue. It's crazy. Mm-hmm. It's hateful what's happened.
It is. It's indicative of something. So it goes beyond the trans issue, actually. I'm seriously scared. I went into this 2 or 3 years ago, slightly, you know, quite detached from it, really. I wanted to, for various reasons, the transitioning of children caught my attention and I ended up researching it. And I hadn't, at that point, if anybody had asked me what I thought about it, in relation to adults, and I had a trans woman friend, I would have probably been a typical liberal thinking, well, that's fine. It's what, if people want to do that, that's absolutely fine. It has no significance beyond that. The more I've researched it, the more I understand the history of it and the relationship between trans activism, medicine, the law, and politics, the more worried I become. And now I've got to the point where I can't not see it as a very serious thing for democratic society. And of course, I have been at the butt of the very kinds of things that you experience. I have to say, I've been at the butt of them quite a lot. And it's quite shocking for me because, you know, up until this point in my life, if anybody had wanted to make a judgment about me, they would have probably thought, well, she's too liberal. And to be actually being accused of being a Nazi, not just from trans activists, actually. There's a whole swathe of our society that is supporting this view. And this is the really frightening thing to me. I can tell you that a colleague had written something about this, and she was written to by another colleague, by a scholar. And this scholar's response, too, included every other sentence was transmisogyny, transphobia. So I think we are in a sorry state in our society where even in academia, which I used to have a romantic idea about as being a place for critical thinking, debate, listening to other people's points of view, the scholarship is now around transgenderism is so low that the word transphobia is used constantly. Nobody quite explains what that means and what credentials you have to be a phobic and why you're a phobic. So the language of academia is becoming like street language almost as well.
Yeah, it's a nonsense. Trans, it's a misnomer. It's a nonsense. You know, to label somebody as a Nazi or transphobic or as a hate speech figure because they don't believe or agree with the notion that, you know, a man can decide to be a woman and then become a woman. But rather than deal with that on an intellectual level and discuss it, to throw out transmisogyny and transphobic. There was a brilliant piece in the Daily Mail last year, I'm sure you read it, by Andrew Pearce, who talked about how gay men and women fought for anything but this. I know it's a separate issue. I know that trans issues are not... trans folk listening to this might say, oh, typical white Irish guy lumping trans and gay and lesbian all into the one pot. I'm not doing that. But he talked about the fight for recognition and how they didn't want this. And I know a lot of gay men through working in radio and in the media for 20 years. Gay men particularly, not so much gay women, but gay men. And they don't understand this craziness, this hysteria now in the media, this labelling of people, calling them the names that we just discussed there because they expressed an opinion. And Andrew Pearce quite eloquently wrote in the Mail saying, we didn't want this. Where is this coming from? No, nobody wants this. You know, we fought for the right to be allowed to live our lives, not to be, you know, labelled as some sort of a protected species that could never be criticised or, you know, debated or argued with or whatever. I want to move to children. It's 14 minutes to the top of the hour, because when you talk about this, again, people who, I suppose, subscribe to that kind of progressive mindset, they say, oh, here you go again. You're like Mary Whitehouse. You're like Helen Lovejoy from The Simpsons, you know, screaming. Yeah. But hang on a second. It's very serious. Young, very young primary school children are being asked to consider issues as profound, I suppose, for an adult, let alone for a child, issues such as gender identity. I would say leave children the bloody well hell alone. Leave them alone to figure out things for themselves. Why are we interfering with childhood in this way and asking them to consider these things, Heather? Again, the question begs to be asked, where is it coming from? Who's behind the agenda?
It's appalling. Who's behind the agenda? If you do the history of this, you would do the history of trans adults wanting respectability for identifying as trans. And you will see a history of trans activists wanting to change the pathologization of trans and to make it something absolutely normal and natural and unproblematic. So the history of the different concepts involves has eventually arrived at the situation where there is an argument that we apparently all have to accept that we're born with this. We're born with a trans identity. And unfortunately, in my view, the children are the victims of this. Because in order to express that view, in order to have that view accepted by society as a whole, we now, all of us apparently, have to believe that children can be born trans. Now, I think there's lots of evidence that this isn't the case. Let me explain. I'm not saying that children are not don't experiment with gender, sometimes can get confused about gender. We probably all have in our lives at various points or another, particularly through childhood as we're learning who we are and so on and so forth. So the important thing to stress here is that I think that our sex, whether we're male or female, is a biological reality. I cannot move away from that. Nobody is going to persuade me that that isn't a biological reality. Whereas the gender is a sort of social stereotyping and so on that is restrictive for everybody. And you can see little boys are restricted by having to be macho and boyish, and little girls are restricted by having to be only feminine and gentle and passive and all of those stereotypes. I want to live in a world where little boys can do whatever, they have the whole range of human capacities that they can express without any fear. I similarly want that for girls, to be able to express typically stereotypically masculine or feminine behaviors. That children should, in my view, be allowed to have, to be who they are. Let them grow up with that freedom. You see, I think that that's truly progressive. I think it's reactionary and regressive to have this trans idea, which is that there is something essential about masculinity, there's something essential about femininity. They're all based on ridiculous stereotypes, like which toys you play with, what clothes you want to wear, and that you're born with it. So you can be a boy and you can have a pink brain or vice versa. There's no neuroscientific evidence for this whatsoever, whatsoever. But now we are in a situation in which it's almost blasphemy to talk about the gender as a social construction. That's the way I've just talked about it. We have to talk about it as an identity, and it's inherent. And parents should beware, because increasingly organizations are going into schools and teaching this to very small children. I think probably about the age of four this begins. Actually, in state schools up and down the land, they go and they, these organizations, and they do workshops for children, they do workshops for parents, they do workshops for teachers, and then they have social clubs for adolescents that go along that they're a part of this. And you have to tease out, how did this happen? Well, the Equalities Act of 2010 arose out of particular changes to the law before then. And, of course, schools and other organizations now are legally obliged to comply with various laws about diversity. And then who are the people that are going into the schools and offering diversity courses are very trans-affirmative groups. So,
do you think, Heather, do you think that parents are largely in the dark about it?
I think they are. I think they absolutely are in the dark about it. And if we go back to what you said, Richie, about this phobia business and gay people, what has happened is that the trans activism has got a new language now, and it's piggybacking on that language of homophobia, which was useful to gay people to demonstrate that if you had an ab reaction to them being gay, that there was some sort of prejudice in you. What has actually happened is that the term transphobia has piggybacked on the back of that. So the ordinary person now will think, oh, I daren't object to this because it's the equivalent of being homophobic. Well, it isn't. They're two quite separate things, and we need to get this very, very clear, as you were doing previously a few moments ago. So parents are unsure what to think. There's no blame to parents here, because parents are getting little bits of snippets of information here, little bits of there, and obviously they think it must be legitimate. If these organizations go into school, they must be ratified, they must be bona fide, they must be, the government obviously agrees with this. So bit by bit, incrementally, we're getting into a situation where we hardly dare even question what is going on, even question it. So, you know, parents are told, and why would they think anything else, that maybe there are some children that at four really have got a deeply embedded gender identity that somehow they were born with. And once this concept, it's like a snowball, it's gaining ground, it's rolling, and it's just gaining and gathering ground. So what we need is, we really need to unpick some of these issues. We need to do it publicly, but we can't do it publicly because people are afraid to speak out about it for their jobs. People are afraid to speak out about it in case they're seen as transphobic, or if they're or an equivalent of a Mary Whitehouse figure. So in a sense, the trans activists have really won a war of rhetoric, and they've won a political war in many ways, and they will win it even more if this gender recognition reform goes through.
And you have to imagine, Heather, we've got about 3 minutes left on this, you have to imagine it is going to go through, because...
Is it? Oh, there's no doubt about it.
Yeah.
It's just a tick-box exercise, I think, that, you know, we're pretending that there's some possibility that it won't go through. But, it's the tick-box exercise. There is a survey for your listeners, you know, that you can fill in. You just Google it. And apparently whether the reform will go through or not is dependent on the public's reaction to it. Well, you know, let's be optimistic. There's no reason to think that optimism is in the order of the day. I think it will go through. And I think people are wandering blindly, sleepwalking into a situation here of great importance for society and children.
Yeah, it's a huge issue. I've covered it quite a bit, and sometimes I've been a bit reticent to go back into it, thinking, well, it's only been a week or so since... I've covered it, but I do genuinely believe it is one of the most pressing issues facing, you know, people, with particularly with children, as you've identified in the book that you co-edited this year. I've tweeted a link to your website. Heather's website is heather-brunskill-evans.co.uk. I've tweeted a link out to it. As we get closer to finding out whether this will be, to use the term, ratified or not, I think we should get into it again. I'll endeavour to continue to invite the more, I don't want to say it, but I have to say it, the more radical of these trans activists to come on the programme and debate me. But you know, Heather, it's not just this issue. Whether it's the Israel-Palestine issue, it doesn't matter what it is.
Yeah.
You know, you can't get sane and rational debate anymore. And I'm a guy who came up in radio in the late 1990s when people would... be completely opposed to your point of view, but they would say, I'll come on your programme anyway, and I'll have a battle with you. And so long as you didn't become obnoxious as a host and insult them, which I never did, and as long as you gave them plenty of time, they would say, well, you know what, I still don't agree with you, but fair play to you. We've moved away from that. You can't do it anymore.
No, we can't.
People,
and that's the really serious thing for our society as well.
What is that teaching children, that? I mean, young children are so impressionable. When they see one side of an argument go on to social media and scream abuse and call names and refuse to engage with their political opponents or whatever it is, we're in a bad spot. I'm going to give you the final word, Heather, but I'll be inviting you back on in the autumn if you'll come back on. Final word to you.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Last 30 seconds to you, if you want to sum up there.
If I want to sum up, okay, for your listeners, I think that what I would like is for people to get out of this idea that this is just a little spat going on between feminists and trans activists. It's really not about that. It suits mainstream media to present it in this way. It's constantly presented in this way. And this is why the public isn't engaging with it. So the public need to put that to one side, this idea that it's feminists and trans activists and they're half as bad as each other and so on. It really isn't like that. A very serious thing is going on. A very, very serious thing is going on, to which we should all be alert.
Heather, really good to speak with you today. Heather-brunskill-evans.co.uk. I've tweeted it out. Thanks for coming on. Who knows, you know, things might change, and next time we do a programme like this, we might do a longer stint, and maybe somebody who's in, you know, who opposes, whose opinions differ to yours and mine, might come on.
That would
be great, wouldn't it? And have a proper
dialogue, a grown-up
debate. Heather, look after yourself. Thanks for that.
Thanks, Richie. It's great.
Great to speak with you. Yeah. Bye for now. Heather Brunskill Evans, a social theorist and philosopher there. You can find out more about Heather It's heather-brunskill-evans.co.uk. And she's also on Twitter as well. I'm going to tweet out where you can find her on Twitter. Right, we better move on swiftly. It's 90 seconds to the top of the hour. We're going to take a very quick break. Back in a minute with plenty more. And I'll read some of your tweets as well when I come back.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever. Forever.
Introducing the H2O app, a powerful water structuring application that programs vibrational energies into water through the use of different sound frequencies. Once programmed, the use of water for drinking, cooking, bathing. Give it to your friends and colleagues or spread it around the garden. The list goes on. It's not just water that the app can be used for either. It's great for programming crystals too. The H2O app is free to download and is available on both Android and Apple platforms. For further information, go to h2oapp.online.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
The Richie Allen Show relies on your support. Go to richieallen.co.uk and set up a monthly donation today.
Welcome back. Monday's program, it's exactly, well, it's coming up for 1 minute past the hour, the 30th of July 2018. It's a hugely serious issue, that. It's huge. A number of you are tweeting me that you believe that it's part of an agenda to ultimately mess with the minds of children and to confuse children, that there's a deliberate agenda. You know, I've got a lot of sympathy with that. I don't know what Heather Brunskill Evans thinks about that. That might be a step too far for Heather. I have no idea. We might get into it in the future on a future programme. But yeah, absolutely. Why else would you introduce this to four-year-old children? And by this, I mean anything to do with sexuality, gender identity, sexual preference. Why would you be harassing children about that? Leave them alone. And then you wonder why you read stories in the paper. And of course, the papers are full of shite. You have no idea how true or untrue the stories are, but there have been stories in the weekend's papers and today that suggest that there's a problem with sexual assaults in primary schools, and they're attributing this partly to the ease with which children can access pornography, and I have some sympathy with that as well. You know, pornography tends to be violent, pretty much 100% violent these days, doesn't it? Aggressive, nasty, violent pornography that kids can get their hands on so easily. Mad time to be a child and a mad time to be a parent. I have no doubt about that. Thanks for your tweets. Hi to Sean McDonald. Hi to Faisal. Hi to Moinga as well. Thanks for tweeting out the links to the newspaper articles there, Sean. Sue tweets, it's all about confusing the young. I agree with that. Not all about, but it's got a lot to do with it, I think, in my opinion as well. Bob Stew texts me to say, or tweets me to say, it won't be long before biology studies are turned on their head. Professors are forced out and academic textbooks will be burnt in the streets in the UK. Well, let's hope we're a deal away from that. Hi to Neil, hi to Dan Simmons, to Bass Ninja as well. A lot of tweets came in there during that. Loads of stuff. To follow what other people are tweeting to me, just go to twitter.com and where it says search Twitter, you've heard this before, put Richie Allen Show, all one word, in, press enter, and you'll see what other people are tweeting to me. Here's some Macy Gray for you before we welcome Neil Sanders back to the show.
Can't that fate has brought us here, and we should be together, babe, but we're not. I'll play it off, but I'm dreaming. When you are not there, goodbye, and I choke. I try to walk away and I stumble. Though I try to hide it, it's clear my world crumbles when you are not there. I may appear to be free, but I'm just a prisoner of your love. And I may seem alright and smile when you leave, but my smiles are just a front, just a front. Hey, now play it off, but I'm dreaming of you. And I'll keep my cool, but I'm feeling. I try to say goodbye and I choke. Yeah, try to walk away and I stumble.
Right, music from Macy Gray, song called I Try, 1999, I think it is. I should know, I could have looked it up, but there you go. Welcome back to the programme. It is your Richie Allen Show for Monday, July 30th, 2018. What a scorching summer we've had. My next guest is no stranger to you. He's been on the programme several times before. I think he's pretty terrific. I think he's pretty stellar. The work that he's done on mind control, well, it's up there with anybody's. And his books, which I will tweet links to and which can be found on his website, neilsandersmindcontrol.com, his books are essential reading. They really are. Now, he's in the middle, I think. I would say he's on a very important track or trail at the moment in terms of the research he's doing right now. And he's begun a blog on his website, neilsandersmindcontrol.com, and his first postings are about a subject that we spoke about last time he was on the programme, the creation of the alt-right, as we know it today in 2018, the creation of the 21st century right-wing media, where that has come from. Cambridge Analytica, of course. Brexit, the election of Donald Trump, Robert Mercer, Breitbart. Who are these people? How have they been so influential in the election campaigns that they have attempted to manipulate? What is their real agenda and where is it all going? Well, he's writing about it, and it's terrific reading, Cambridge Analytica and the creation of right-wing media. Neil Sanders, welcome back to the programme. How are you?
I'm very well, Richie. Thank you very much for having me on.
How's the music going, by the way?
Oh, it's going all right. It's going all right. We haven't actually had a gig yet, but we're waiting. We've got some planned in the near future.
Ah, good stuff. If you're up this neck of the woods, or even you don't have to be in this neck of the woods, wherever you are, I'll find you. Love a bit of live music. Meant everything I said. This is really good stuff. There are obviously one or two little bones of contention that I'll throw in there to be the devil's advocate, but your piece is brilliant, and it throws up as many questions as it does answers, I think, which is no bad thing either.
Mm.
You talk about, when you were last on the programme, we talked about Breitbart, we talked about Robert Mercer, and we talked about Cambridge Analytica. And it's interesting that we're talking about it this week, because it's not only not going away, this, but it seems to be escalating in terms of the coverage it's getting by the print media in this country, the print media in the United States. You are convinced now that mm-hmm. this firm, Cambridge Analytica, how do I phrase this? I should have written this down. That they were, or they are, or were the turning point in terms of their activities, were a significant turning point in the presidential race in the United States and in the referendum here in the United Kingdom. They were more than a big player. They swung those results.
Well, I mean, I think that what they did, which is basically in their medium, they did two things. They focused on issues that people were genuinely concerned about, issues that are genuinely worrying, feeling disenfranchised, the lack of sort of jobs, the lack of economy, the lack of identity that people feel, the growing wage gap, the fact that you're disenfranchised by the elites. They took real issues like that and they exaggerated them. They heightened people's fears to make them more susceptible to it. They also basically took things that were not true or were not proven to be true, purposely to again, using their own phrase, leverage a false enemy to give people a fake enemy to fight against. And I think in that way, they utilized an incredibly manipulative and clever advertising technique isn't strong enough, because essentially this is a psychological warfare program. Since I've last been on the show, Richie, I've discovered that actually was admitted in the recent court case, but it got swamped, and I'll come on to that in a second. The tactics of SCL and Cambridge Analytica, their data-driven behaviour change, which has been proven to be successful in altering over 100 elections, and that's from their own website and from their own documentation, is under export control from the British government, and it is considered a psychological weapon that has to be checked with the government before it is employed, which would mean that members of the government were aware that it was being utilised in this way during the Brexit campaign and during the Donald Trump election.
That's a startling revelation, that, isn't it? Now, what comes to mind immediately is that the Conservative Party are pretty split down the middle, right across the back benches, in terms of those who support leaving the European Union and those who don't. Now, presumably, many Conservative, not only MPs, but power brokers who are in favour of staying in the European Union, they would have been aware of this British military psyops company, SCL, as well. Why didn't they speak up about it sooner, Remainers?
A lot of it was hidden. Basically, a lot of it didn't come out until afterwards, because they started probing into the financing of Aggregate IQ. So a lot of it didn't come out until afterwards, and it could be perhaps on a need-to-know basis. The thing is, basically, I suspect there's been a fight. What there is there's a series of wealthy people that want to stay in the EU, and there's a series of wealthy people that wanted Hillary Clinton to become president. There's a series of wealthy people that wanted to be out of the EU, and there's a series of people that wanted Donald Trump to be president. And it's for their own agenda. To give you an idea, when we leave the European Union, we're no longer part of the tax laws. Remember when the Panama Papers came out, and basically people were avoiding tax semi-legally by using offshore tax havens? That's going to be illegal in 2019 if you're in the European Union. So people like William Rees-Mogg will make an absolute killing from that. Just prior to the leave vote being announced, Nigel Farage went on television and lied to everybody and told people that they'd actually lost, which caused speculation on the pound, and certain hedge fund managers like Robert Mercer and people from Goldman Sachs made an absolute killing.
And you believe that Farage either knowingly, or he was told to say that, maybe he didn't know, but Farage was used as some sort of a stooge by people who were convinced that the result would go their way, so that you can make this killing.
This has been reported, and he admitted to it, although he basically said, oh no, I didn't know, which was impossible because he'd already been told the information. It's not insider trading, because basically he's not a tradesman as he used to be, but because he's an ex-broker, it'd be naive to not realise that his, you know, hedge fund managing billionaire friends would make a killing off of this. So there's a lot of shifty deals. And I'll point this out. Like, I'm not pro-EU, I'm not pro-nationalism, I'm not pro-anything. Like, as I say, there's a fight going on between different factions of the establishment. Some who want one thing and some who want another thing. And it's all for their own agenda, and they have absolutely no care about the general population.
Let me ask you a quick question here. This is brilliant stuff. Neil Sanders on the Richie Allen Show. I won't be interrupting you all the time. But let me ask you a question on that. So you have rich elites who wanted Hillary, rich elites who wanted Trump, rich elites who wanted to stay in the European Union, rich elites who wanted out. I have no doubt you're right, Neil. This is proper stuff, this. Is that level three of the pyramid? Is there something or somebody at the top of the pyramid who couldn't give a shite one way or the other?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
I mean, basically, you know, at the very top, it really doesn't matter. They've got so much money that the shifting is like, you know, like pebbles, like grains of sand on the beach. It really doesn't matter. It's that sort of level. I mean, basically, I'll give you an idea. The reason why Robert Mercer and the Koch brothers wanted to get Trump in was basically so they could get Stephen Miller and Steve Bannon and Kellyanne Conway and over 67 members of the Heritage Foundation, which is a far right foundation. They've become members of the Trump staff. Stephen Miller, who, by the way, went to university with Richard Spencer and mentored him at university, who was also sponsored by Robert Mercer. He's the person that was basically the architect of the so-called Muslim ban. And he was also the person who was the architect of the April change to the law that was proposed by Jeff Sessions that caused the separation of families at the border by changing a misdemeanor to a felony crime. So that's why they've wanted to get in. The other reason that they say the Koch brothers and the Mercers wanted him is because one of the first things that he did was roll back EPA and worker rights legislation and lower the tax by 25%, giving them all basically a massive, massive bonus. I mean, you could make the argument that he's doing something stupid with these tariffs at the minute and this is being pushed back. But as I said, these people have got hedge funds as well, so they bet against themselves. They've got it all tied up. It's incredibly manipulative, and it's all about making huge amounts of money.
And it's multi-layered. Let me ask you about this. I want to talk in a few minutes about Lauren Southern and Tommy the Muppet Robinson and that ilk, because I've got, I think you're on more than the right track when you're talking about who these people are and why they're being promoted, and I want to talk about that. But you did mention something I can't let go a few minutes ago. You said, and it's really important, it's a really important area of research, you said that these companies like Cambridge Analytica, they targeted people by leveraging false enemies, by giving people fake enemies.
Yep.
Give me an example. What type of fake enemy? Give me one fake enemy.
Well, one thing that they were proven to do was they showed... they spread fake news stories for a start, and this is again, it came out in the recent court case. Remember that story about the 13-year-old being raped in Sweden and the Muslim getting away with it? That was a fake story created by Cambridge Analytica. Can you remember that story about Germany allowing child marriages? That was a fake story created by Cambridge Analytica. Can you remember that story about WikiLeaks exposing that Hillary Clinton personally sent weapons to ISIS? That was a fake story by Cambridge Analytica. Can you remember that story about the Pope liking Donald Trump? That was a fake story put out there by Cambridge Analytica. The other thing that they did was they spread videos in swing states, particularly in the southern and Midwest areas of the United States, showing supposed news footage of Paris and Germany falling to Sharia law. I've got a quote about it here. There's somebody that basically, Emma Bryant, she investigated it incredibly thoroughly. If you just allow me to read this quote. Using Cambridge Analytica's media strategy, Trump's false racist and Islamophobic comments, resentment and fear were deployed where they would be most effective, mobilizing swing state audiences using voters' personal data to monitor them and using psychological profiling to manipulate their emotional responses en masse. And her colleague said, Damien Collins said, data analytics was used to target voters who were concerned about this issue and to frighten them with directed messages designed to create an artificial enemy for them to act against.
I have
so
a problem
exactly
with that. I have a problem with that. I have many problems with Damien Collins, by the way, this culture, media culture guy. But we'll get into that another day. Problem I have with it is artificial enemies. Now, you know that I'm not, you know, like yourself, I'm neither right wing nor left wing. I try and deal in facts. The problem I have with this is the policies of neoconservatism and the influences of the Zionist lobby in the United States have led, inarguably, in my opinion, he says arrogantly, inarguably to the destruction of Libya, Syria, Afghanistan, Iraq, and have forced millions of people to leave those countries.
Absolutely.
That's a real thing, right?
Now, those
and those people are not our enemies. God love them. But the problem is, I believe the people, and by the way, and I'm not patronising you for a minute, your work on this is absolutely mint. It's brilliant. And everybody should read it. And I agree with everything you say, but I just draw a slightly different conclusion. It doesn't mean I'm right. I just draw a slightly different conclusion. What I think is, the same people behind what you've brilliantly deconstructed, Neil, those are the same bastards behind the destruction of the Middle East.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, totally. Yeah. No, I agree with you 100% on that. Yeah, that's not in debate. But again, what they've done is they've taken these people who are basically poor and fortunates, and they've manipulated it so that people think that they're either an invading swarm or the enemy, or they're all rapists, or they're all criminals. And it's done by manipulation of data. There was a very particular one that basically said half the crime in Berlin has been done by migrants. And this was in Breitbart and various other of these right-wing media outlets. And it basically postulated and gave the impression that this crime was against German citizens and it was serious crime. When you actually looked at the statistics, the majority of the crime was like not going on buses without without tickets and stuff like that. And even further, the majority of the actual other crimes were petty crimes that happen in refugee camps between refugees, thefts, etc., etc. It doesn't mean that basically an influx of massive amounts of people doesn't cause problems. It means that this is being manipulated. And another way that was being manipulated was that there was a meme that was going around that showed buses of refugees from Syria being taken to Belgium, into France, and stuff like that. And the meme was put around that, oh, this will be leftists. This will be leftists funding this. And like, this is the plan to flood Europe and white genocide. And if you actually did 5 minutes of research, what happened was these people turned up at Hungary, and then the president of Hungary put them on buses, paid for these buses, and buggered them off so that they were someone else's problem, and then blamed it on leftists. And it wasn't it. Of course, there's problems with all sides of the political spectrum. But what's annoying me at the minute is this just blatant manipulation of the facts.
And the promotion of far-right hatred. Celebrities and hatred. But again, this is where we might diverge slightly. And I become, maybe in your mind, I become a crazy conspiracy theorist. Do you know where I think this has its origins? And I'm going to say this and then you're going to eviscerate it if you want. I believe it has its origins because I began making independent shows like this back in the late 2000s. Yes, I was working for a commercial radio station, but they allowed me to do whatever I wanted. So I started talking about things that you wouldn't get on the BBC and so on, so on, so on. And then it escalated. But I began in the late 1990s. So I've been around the media a long time. I think what we're seeing here, and this is where we go back to the pyramid again, is at some stage, and you're more than qualified to comment on this, at some stage, I believe people began to wake up to the nonsense of the left-right, you know, identity politics. You know, you can vote your way out of the mess. You can choose left and it'll be okay, or choose right and it's okay. And I believe people began to lose interest in it and began to look elsewhere for their answers. And somebody or something noticed that and decided to up the game. And knowingly, because they knew that by promoting this alt-right, far-right narrative, it was obviously going to stir something in the left or in socialism or in the far left. And it would get us all re-engaged again in the bullshit that is politics. That's what I think.
I agree with you 100%.
Oh, there you are. It's the
first. Absolutely. No, that's not without question. Like, absolutely. No, I totally agree with that. So it is about divide and conquer. Absolutely, yeah. And it's broader than that. As you say, it's totally connected to the Middle East as well, and you know, the domination of that. The one of the things that people don't understand about the Middle East is that the whole point of like creating chaos in the Middle East is to prevent it from becoming an economic faction that would join together and have more oil revenue than any other like conglomerate on the history of the planet, and just make the West obsolete. So we've got to, like, or we, you know, that's the whole point of introducing terrorism and propping up states and overthrowing the Shah for British Petroleum and basically allowing Israel to get away with, monstrosities, because basically it creates chaos in the region by having it there. Like, I totally agree with you on all of this, Richie. This isn't in doubt. This is just So what I'm talking about is one tentacle of it.
Lauren Southern and Laura Loomer and Tommy Robinson, this is fascinating. And a lot of people listening to this programme won't have considered some of your ideas about who these people are and how they've come to prominence. Because, sadly, even amongst my audience, there are people, and I'm not criticising them, people should think what they want, but they are mired in this idea of left against right. And they're mired in this opinion. They are rooted to these ideas that people like Tommy Robinson, working class heroes, saying what other people won't say and all that bollocks. And they can't get it into their heads that something else is going on. Who are these people and who are funding them?
Do you mind if I just read the bit? It'll take me about 2 minutes.
No, read away. Take as long as you want. Okay. Go ahead.
Well, let's just first start with Breitbart. Okay, Breitbart was set up essentially first by Andrew Breitbart, but then with a huge amount of money by two people via a company called GAI, which was set up by ex-Goldman Sachs broker Steve Bannon. Steve Bannon basically set up GIA to technically illegally launder money from the Koch brothers and Robert Mercer into Breitbart. Robert Mercer is an industrialist that runs the hedge fund Renaissance Technologies. He's also very, very far right. The Koch brothers are conservative industrialists and the sort of people that basically InfoWars and Drudge Report and all these people used to like make their bread and butter, pointing out what evil sort of nefarious influence they had over the planet. They're also incredibly conservative. Basically, Steve Bannon personally oversaw the Cambridge Analytica campaign to steal your social media data and to stoke outrage by spreading fake stories to specific audiences via social media. Coincidentally, these stories were spread by Breitbart, InfoWars, Drudge Report, Rebel Media, and various other outlets. Incidentally, General Michael Flynn, who is currently awaiting sentence for lying to the FBI whilst working as part of the Trump White House, and he also took bribes from the Turkish government to arrange for the murder of Kurdish people, was on the board of governors for Cambridge Analytica. If I get time, I'll tell you that who else was on the board as well. So Breitbart was exposed as having neo-Nazis like Andrew Weave Arenheimer and Devin Saucier write articles that Milo Yiannopoulos would take credit for. Breitbart and Steve Bannon basically have said that they're involved in a culture war and also would have admitted to spreading fake stories and stories that they knew were true. Specifically, they admitted to making up stories to discredit Roy Moore's accusers, who said that he was a child molester. They also spread fake stories about a group of migrants setting fire to a mosque in to a church in Berlin. Since being dropped by Breitbart, Milo Yiannopoulos still had the use of Robert Mercer's private security team and has more recently been seen on InfoWars. Milo publicly stated that he'd been on boat parties and seen young boys having sex with grown men, but refused to name them because he didn't want to be indiscreet, which is curious because Steve Bannon's ex-business partners were Mark Collins Rector and Brock Pierce, both convicted paedophiles that threw similar boat parties, allegedly with Bryan Singer in attendance. Shortly before he rose to fame, doxing people during the Gamergate debacle, Milo Yiannopoulos was employed by the Catholic Herald, where he mostly wrote articles about how mean the internet is and how he should be regulated to protect people's feelings. And then he did a 180 when he realized that he could make some money. Robert Mercer is pretty clear in his political beliefs and his ideologies, and in the past few years he's given $45 million to far-right campaigns and $62 million to far-right think tanks. Cambridge Analytica was used semi-legally in the USA after consulting with none other than Rudy Giuliani and his law firm to make sure that they could get through certain loopholes. And it had a campaign that flooded swing states and middle America with sock puppets accounts spewing bile, fake stories designed to outrage, and videos showing France and Germany under Sharia law. Many of these videos were produced or shared by a company called Gatestone Media, which also provides content for Rebel Media. John Bolton, the current security advisor, sits on the board of Gatestone Media, and he was basically the architect of the war on terror. The main owner of Gatestone is Nina Rosenwald, who's the heir to the Sears catalogue fortune. Nina Rosenwald was in 2003 a recipient of the Louis Brandeis Award given by the Zionist Organization of America for her pro-Israel advocacy. Robert Mercer also helped fund Gatestone Media via her family foundation, and funding for Gatestone also comes from the Middle East Forum, which is a hardline, right-wing, conservative, pro-Israel think tank. Robert Mercer, the financier of Breitbart and the financier of Cambridge Analytica, also finances Rebel Media, along with the David Horowitz Foundation. Rebel Media employs Tommy Robinson, Lauren Southern and Laura Loomer, all of whom are right-wing antagonists who are basically pretty scant with the facts. Most of these people have been, at some point, promoted by Breitbart or InfoWars. Tommy Robinson, Stephen Yaxley-Lennon, Paul Harris, whichever name he wants to be using, and James O'Keefe also received funding via Robert Mercer and the David Horowitz Freedom Center, which is financed by Robert Shulman, who is a board member for the Friends of Israel's Defense Forces. Robert Shulman also provides funding for Rebel Media. Nina Rosenwald, the heiress to Sears, also helps fund James O'Keefe and Project Veritas. Geert Wilders, the Dutch far-right antagonist, who is also financed by the David Horowitz Freedom Center, and the MEF helps fund Tommy Robinson's legal team. He's basically currently in jail, as people know, for breaching his bail conditions and jeopardizing a court case. The MEF also sponsored and organized the second free Tommy Robinson gathering, which was held in July. The statement was signed by the MEF director, Greg Roman, who has previously worked in Israel's defense and foreign ministries. MEF president Daniel Pipes, meanwhile, has been described by the Southern Poverty Law Center as being an anti-Muslim activist. And recently it was revealed that members of Breitbart, probably Steve Bannon, lobbied the US Congressman and Ambassador for International Religious Freedom, Sam Brownback, to approach UK envoys and request an appeal of Tommy Robinson's sentence, despite the fact that he had pled guilty. Robert Mercer and the Koch brothers also financed James O'Keefe at Project Veritas, who often interacted with Breitbart and InfoWars, most famously on the failed sting on Acorn and Planned Parenthood, where he dressed up as a pimp and offered the companies the profits from his trafficking ring.
Yeah.
He was arrested shortly afterwards. Right. The Daily Caller is also financed by the Koch brothers. Dave Rubin and the Rubin Report are therefore also financed by the Koch brothers. The Washington Free Beacon is also financed by the Koch brothers. Ben Shapiro was financed by the Koch brothers before he left Breitbart, and now he doesn't publicly flaunt who he's financed by. But Alex Jones recently said in a hissy fit, threatened to expose his billionaire backers. So I did a bit of digging, and it turns out that Ben Shapiro and the Daily Wire are actually financed by the Wilkes brothers. Dan and Faris Wilkes are right-wing fundamentalist Christians who made their money via the fracking industry. And they donated over $15 million to a super PAC supporting Ted Cruz, who was the original choice of Cambridge Analytica. The Wilkes brothers also financed PragerU. PragerU is a conservative media outlet and a YouTube channel that champions causes that they favour. And people like Jordan Peterson, Dave Rubin and Candace Owens have all made videos for PragerU, amongst others. The Koch brothers, via a series of conduits, also provide financing for the Heritage Foundation. The Heritage Foundation is a right-wing think tank that tries to sway public policy and has been described as one of the most influential conservative research centres in the world. Rebecca Mercer, Robert Mercer's daughter, has been on the board of trustees since 2014, which is about the same time that Cambridge Analytica was purchased by or set up by Robert Mercer. At least 66 foundation employees and alumni got staffing positions in the Trump administration. And the Heritage Foundation also recommended that the cabinet members Scott Pruitt, Betsy DeVos, Mick Mulvaney, Rick Perry and Jeff Sessions be appointed positions. Candace Owens, despite claiming to be fiercely independent, works for Turning Point USA, which is a far-right organization funded by billionaire Betsy DeVos and the Koch brothers.
The Koch brothers, yeah. I read this today. I mean, and I didn't read it today. I read it last week. I read it again today. And I cross-referenced everything that you said. It took me about 3 hours to do it. No, it's great. It's terrific.
Sorry, I appreciate this is going on. It's very, very nearly done.
Yeah, but I just want to make that point. I've cross-referenced this, what you're hearing from Neil now, and this can be found at neilsandersmindcontrol.com. And everything he's saying, the connections and the links that he is making here are true, are factual and are irrefutable. Go ahead.
Betsy DeVos also finances Candace Owens. The DeVos family over the years have financed the Republican Party to the tune of over $200 million. Betsy DeVos is the current Secretary of Education for the USA, and she is part of many conservative think tanks funded by the Koch brothers. So by remarkable coincidence, the media outlets owned by Robert Mercer and the Koch brothers and those employed by said outlets spread anger and discontent in a manner surprisingly similar to that of the company, also financed by Robert Mercer, which works for the British government and American intelligence agencies when they wish to ensure their preferred outcomes in elections and induce behavioural change. Right, last bit. Richard Spencer of the NPI, who claims to have coined the term alt-right, is also financed by the elites. He's financed by the multimillionaire William Regnery II of the elite Regnery family. Regnery also funds the right-wing think tank, the Charles Martel Society. The aide to Donald Trump, Stephen Miller, was a longtime friend of Richard Spencer, and he was the person who proposed the Muslim ban and taking away children from their parents at the border to act as a deterrent. Whilst at Duke University, Miller and the Duke Conservative Union helped co-member Richard Spencer, a Duke graduate student at the time, with fundraising and promotion for an immigration policy debate in March between the Open Borders activists, the University of Oregon, and journalist Peter Brimlow, the founder of the anti-immigration website VDare. Spencer would later become an important figure in the white supremacist movement and the president of the National Policy Institute, famous for coining the term alt-right. Spencer stated in the media that he'd spent a lot of time with Miller at Duke and that Miller had mentored Spencer, and he described their relationship as close and saying that he was kind of glad that no one had talked about this because he feared that it would harm Trump's reputation. Richard Spencer organised the Unite the Right march with Jason Kessler at Trump Tower, and by a huge coincidence, Nigel Farage was there. Now, I got a lot of crap for that because people don't believe that. It's actually 100% true, but I got one element wrong. Stephen Miller was there as well. So there are even more Trump people there than I actually thought. So where does all of that leave us? Well, basically, as I said, like there's this thing called Cambridge Analytica, which is basically uses military psychological tactics to spread hate. They have connections to the MOD, the British military intelligence, and the US State Department, the British establishment, and they use tactics that are alarmingly similar to established GACHQ programs like JTRIG and US military and intelligence operations like SMISC and
which you've written about in your book, yeah.
And they're owned and basically financed by these mysterious right-wing millionaires.
Do you know something, though? Do you know something? Well, two things, right. I've had some tweets while we've been speaking, understandably. Mm-hmm. I've had a lot of tweets. Rob tweets, Richie, tell the women in Germany who are being raped by this Muslim infestation at alarming rates. Tell those women that they are making this up. And I've had another tweet from somebody. And in fact, it's one of those that Twitter says it contains offensive content. If you want to open it, open it. And it talks about, you know, grooming gangs in this country as well. And there are people listening to this who will say that you might be 100% right about the manipulation of these companies. And I think you are. There's no doubt about it. That being said, I don't believe for a minute Brexit is going to happen, nor was it ever meant to happen. It ain't going to happen, in my opinion. It's disintegrating in front of our eyes, as I predicted it would the day after the referendum, the only thing I've gotten right in 5 years. But people will say Sweden, Germany, parts of this country, there have been social issues, to put it mildly,
My response to that would be that, of course, there's been issues. There's always issues when there's huge swathes of people. But have you got that particular information from Breitbart or the
Bloomberg
or Daily Wire? Because I'll tell you now, this is my sort of tagline. Breitbart is financed by the elites. Rebel Media is financed by the elites and therefore their stars. Tommy Robinson, Lauren Southern, Lauren Loomer, Steve Bannon, Milo Yiannopoulos, etc. are also financed by the elites. Richard Spencer is financed by the elites. The Daily Caller is financed by the elites. Dave Rubin is financed by the elites. Ben Shapiro is financed by the elites. Candace Owens is financed by the elites. Cambridge Analytica is financed by the elites and is a tool of elements of the UK and the US government. That's all I know. And I don't trust the elites or the UK or the US government.
And
that comes from them.
I think what you've written is irrefutable. And this isn't a but. It's just pointing out that, you know, the heroes of the left are equally financed by the elites. And by the way, mm-hmm. the tweet from Rob about tell the women in Germany who were raped by Muslim gangs, the story he sent to support his contention was a story from Bloomberg Media.
Mm-hmm. And was it proven to be true?
No, but look, I don't know if it is or if it isn't true.
Of course there's been problems. There's rapes at every music festival that there is. Okay, but again, what they've done is they've taken a real issue and they've heightened it to extremes, played on people's fears, played on people's xenophobia, played on people's disenfranchisement, the media lie to us, the elitist media and all that. And they've used it to make you angry and to leverage an enemy that really isn't the enemy.
You're right. You're absolutely 100% right. And while you're doing that, you're not actually asking questions of the monumental fuckers responsible for... I mean, we've had stories today. They're credited stories. They're properly sourced stories. And over the weekend about weapons being recovered from, you know, dead jihadists in Syria and elsewhere. Weapons that can be directly traced to Raytheon, to British Aerospace. What a surprise.
Of course.
So let's start screaming at Muslims collectively because of the inevitable problems when you blow people's houses to smithereens and you kill their children and you force them out of their own country into Southern Europe. And rather than deal with that and who might be behind that and why, by asking some serious questions, you don't. And that's where you're convinced, and I think you're right, that Cambridge Analytica and Mercer and Breitbart and all these clowns, they came in to feed the flames of that, to prevent people from saying, well, who benefits when we rape, pillage and destroy the Middle East? Who benefits?
Well, absolutely. But I mean, like, part of that is to do with the fact that the outlets like InfoWars a few years ago did a 100% flip when they used to talk about this false right-left paradigm and who was the money behind people and stuff like that. And then they basically turned... I think they tried to steal Glenn Beck's demographic and just turned into a complete Trump government sort of rally cry, anti-Islam... just nonsense, just fear-mongers. I mean, they'd always had an element of nonsense about them, but they flipped. So the outlets where that usually people would be saying, like, hang on, we do know that ISIS is funded and trained by our military, and it's there basically to create tension in the region. And isn't it strange that every single thing that happens that ISIS claim credit for in some way is beneficial to the government, or in some way is beneficial to the to government foreign policy? And, you know, and that was the argument that used to be had. People used to be not convinced by the propaganda, the fear propaganda.
We used to have critical thinking. So there's been a brilliant question asked of you by Mark Richards. Good question, this. Well, it's not a bad question. It's a question. Mark asks Neil. By the way, Neil's website, neilsandersmindcontrol.com. Folks, read the blog. Read every bit of it. And if you are of the mindset, or if you are sympathetic to the Lauren Southerns and the Tommy Robinsons, I'm not telling you I know better than you. I'm not telling you I'm more intelligent than you. But I'm telling you you're fucking wrong. Read this article. It's absolutely spot. I've been saying for years, not as eloquently as Neil has written it or haven't done the research he's done. It's all a parlour game of right versus left, and keep people's eyes on media, keep people's eyes on politics as a means to solving your problems and making your life better, when nothing could be further from the truth. Neil, Mark says to you, what do you think of Jeremy Corbyn then? And the party?
I'm not a fan. Like, again, I don't care. I'm not. This is the thing. People think that they come out to my house and I'm reading Sartre with my beret on. I'm really not. I'm not a leftist. I'm having to go at the government because that's who's in it at the minute. Like, I was not a fan of the Clintons. I'm not a fan of Obama. I'm not a fan of Blair. I think that Jeremy Corbyn says some things that are nicer and better and sound more hopeful than other people and has a better record on the face of it than other people could be seen to have. But whether he could implement any of these things to any degree, I'm seriously doubtful, because I just don't really believe in the political system. I think that it's more a dog and pony show to keep the tourists interested, whilst the people who've always run the country run the country. I don't think he'll be allowed to get in, other than for anything. It depends what it is. I don't think that we should privatise the NHS, and I think we should. But I think that this is the point. We should seriously look at things like why they're purposely destroying the NHS.
Absolutely.
And I don't think he's doing that. And I don't think he's going to push any other things. So, you know, and I'm also suspicious, like, there's always that, there's that famous photo of him taking the bus that's always put around, and people say, oh, look, he's taking the bus. No other politicians would do that. It's like, that's a propaganda, it's a marketing campaign. It might be true, but he's got slick marketing behind him as well.
He's a millionaire from Islington in North London. And, you know, this is a fact. And when I say that, I always get hammered. The free market capitalists hammer me to say, what's wrong with that? I'm not saying there's anything wrong with it. I'm pointing out that right across the shadow front bench, right across the government front bench, are a collection and a gaggle of multi-millionaires. But just before we wrap this up, by the way, folks, Neil Sanders, mindcontrol.com. This is, I guess, the beginning. For Neil on this particular subject, because there's so much more he's going to get into on his blog in the next few weeks and months. He's under fake news attack now, Jeremy Corbyn, because he's being destroyed over this alleged anti-Semitism in the Labour Party, which I know certain people listening will say, well, you would say this, Richie, but there is absolutely no evidence that Jew hatred is epidemic either in the country or in the Labour Party. And it seems to me
like
he's wilting under that assault.
Yeah, and I was actually, I was very disappointed to see like people like David Baddiel, who, you know, I always respected as a pretty good comedian, come out and actually say, no, no, there actually genuinely is a problem and perhaps you don't, you know, understand it. And I can't help but think that it's a smear. I agree with you. I don't think I think it's been shamefully used. I'm sure that there is obviously anti-Semitism, but to pull it in such a, it is, you as you say, there's no evidence of Jeremy Corbyn being anti-Semitic.
No, there isn't. This is going to run and run. This very interesting. This, the way this is being reported, you know, the way people like Lauren Southern and Tommy Robinson are being promoted on video platforms like YouTube, giving, you know, I don't know anything about how they use their
algorithms.
Well done, thank you. A word I've used a million times, algorithm. I can't say for certain, but I'm sure that moderates that are looking at this from the point of view that it's all a load of bollocks and that right or left, you know, the doors to the slaughterhouse, there's one on the right, there's one on the left, are being marginalised while people like this are being promoted. And there was a brilliant bit of timing when my YouTube channel was deleted back. And look, I'm nobody important. I'm just saying this. My 80,000 YouTube subscriber channel was deleted in February. At the time I was deleted, Robinson, whose channel was older than mine, had 80,000 subscribers. Now he's got nearly a million. That's incredible, that, isn't it? You know, this is not kind of whose penis is bigger than whose penis. It's not about that at all. I had to conclude that that sort of thing was being promoted and anything else was either not being promoted, was being shadow banned, or, you know, in some cases was just being deleted for no good reason. Do you think that it's pretty obvious that Lauren Southern, I mean, you look at Lauren Southern's videos, I mean, it is airhead central. It is beyond bollocks.
Absolutely.
And yet you're getting millions of views, right? And millions of subscribers. How?
Because they're telling people what they want to hear, basically.
Yeah.
And on a very subtle level, they're saying, you know, any problem that you've got in your life, A, it's not your fault, it's somebody else's fault, and B, there's a glimmer of hope that we could make your life better if we only just got rid of these pesky other people. And so it's basically spoon-feeding you what you like. I mean, like, you know, people didn't fall for Anjem Chowdhury, or most people didn't fall for Anjem Chowdhury. No. It's like, he's on Good Morning Television, for Christ's sake. How much of a terrorist is he? Like, he's MI5. Why don't people make that same conclusion with Tommy Robinson?
You know, it's a brilliant point. When I interviewed Anjem, I really grilled him on the security connections. I properly got stuck into him. I said, I'm absolutely convinced, Anjem, that you're working for the establishment. I don't buy any of this nonsense at all. And, he was a brilliant interviewee in terms of nothing would fluster him. He just used to laugh. And I was convinced that he was just a boogeyman put out there, an actor effectively. And to stir up what you've just spent the best part of 35 minutes describing. Absolutely spot on.
I mean, it's curious that in both of those cases, everything that they promote, the sort of feelings and the anger and the stereotypical xenophobia and the simplification of issues that it causes, just so happens to fall perfectly in line with UK, US and Israel foreign policy.
That's a brilliant way to leave it, mate. Folks, if you've not read Neil Sanders before, get to Neil Sanders, mindcontrol.com. I've tweeted a link out to it. Neil is also on Twitter. It's Neil Sanders mindcontrol.com. There are links there to his books. Your thoughts are not your own. And now's the only thing that's real. Brilliant analysis of the Manson murders. And we spoke about that on the programme before, the Manson family. Neil Sanders, mindcontrol.com. Don't leave it so long to come back, Neil. I genuinely mean it when I say I love reading it, mate. It's really thought-provoking and gets me kind of agitated as well, which is no bad thing. Really good.
Thank you very much.
Cheers, buddy. And good luck with the band. Speak
soon. Thank you. I'll send you a CD when we've got something.
Do, and we'll play it on the show. That's a promise.
I bet you won't.
I'll play it on the show. Don't worry about that. I play a lot worse. Thanks, Neil. Speak soon. Neil Sanders, Mind Control. I play a lot worse. I've not heard Neil's music yet. Neil Sanders, mindcontrol.com, to read that blog, that extensive article on who Robert Mercer is, who Breitbart are, but more importantly, the creation of Cambridge Analytica, the connections that company has to PSYOP military firms in this country, the establishment. It's great stuff, and where it all leads, Neil Sanders, mindcontrol.com. Exactly 10 minutes to the top of the hour. Very quick break. Back in a minute with some of your tweets, and time has flown by, so we'll be wrapping up in a couple of minutes as well.
Introducing the H2O app, a powerful water structuring application that programs vibrational energies into water through the use of different sound frequencies. Once programmed, the use of water for drinking, cooking, bathing. Give it to your friends and colleagues or spread it around the garden. The list goes on. It's not just water that the app can be used for either. It's great for programming crystals too. The H2O app is free to download and is available on both Android and Apple platforms. For further information, go to h2oapp.online.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
Welcome back to the most listened to independent radio show in Europe. It's your Richie Allen Show.
Yes, love hearing from Neil Sanders. That will trigger those who support people like Milo Yiannopoulos and Tommy Robinson and Lorne Southern. And a lot of those people, not all of those people, many of those people are pleasant and they will listen to other opinions. But most of them won't. And they scream, ah, you're a Hillary. No. They are all the same and they are playing for the same team. That is their job. The job of Tommy Robinson, who's too stupid to know better. His job is to convince people in the legitimacy of the system. Neil summed it up brilliantly. All the problems are as a result of those people over there. If you come on my bandwagon, we'll make it all good. That's the Tommy Robinson mantra. And the Lauren Southern fucking blonde airhead mantra. That's it. Whores. And there's plenty of money in it. I remember back in 2014 when I started this programme, having come up from London, contemplating leaving the media completely. I'd had enough of it after TPV in London. I wanted nothing more to do with live television or live radio. I had so many years of it, sick of it, genuinely sick to death of it. And it was pointed out to me on several occasions, and it is true. It's as true now as it was then. Richie, somebody with your experience in the media, far more sophisticated than the Milo Yiannopouloses and the Tommy Robinsons of this world, you can make a fucking fortune, mate, if you start selling that shite to people. And that's the truth. I'm no martyr and I'm no virtue signaller. None. Signaller. Not at all. But very easy to go down that road and to sell snake oil to people as truth and as reality when it ain't reality. The promotion of the alt-right was carried out, is being carried out by people who don't necessarily believe in that stuff. But they're putting it out there to give the kiss of life to democracy or people's belief in democracy, which was waning in the late noughties. In the late 2007, 2008, 2009, people were becoming totally disillusioned and were understanding because of the bastard murdering fucker Blair and Bush and all of that. People were realising that it's all a parlour game. It's an illusion. Something had to be done about that. And we're seeing what is being done about that now. This promotion of the fascist right lunatic, it's all the Muslims' fault, it's all the fault of the immigrants' brigade, that has been stoked up to energise and to revitalise the left. Get people interested again. Get them engaged in it again. Get them believing in it again. It's wonderful how people are falling for it. You know? And they're making celebrities, as Neil said, out of some of these goons who can barely tie their own shoelaces. That's it for Monday's programme. It's coming up to 5 minutes to the top of the hour. I'm going to endeavour to get this on YouTube before I finish tonight, before I go to bed tonight late. I'll try and get it on YouTube. If not, it'll be on YouTube in the early AM. It will, of course, be on Podomatic Podcast Reel soon. Big shout out to my guest today, Heather Brunscale-Evans. Check out heather-brunscale-evans.co.uk, I think it is. And check out Neil Sanders, mindcontrol.com. Brilliant to have Neil back on this programme. You look after yourselves and one another, and we'll do it all again tomorrow, Tuesday at 7 p.m. UK time. Gonna leave you with the Stereophonics. Alrighty, thanks for listening. Until tomorrow, bye. Yeah.
new.